Welcome back to The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. This week, we bring you another episode of the Delaware Humanities podcast, A More Just Delaware. The podcast examines pivotal moments in legislation related to hate, prejudice, and the fight for equal rights in Delaware. In this third episode, we focus on legislation passed and signed in 2021, banning discrimination based on natural hairstyles. This legislation is often referred to here and other places where it's passed as the Create a Respectful and Open World for Natural Hair, or CROWN Act. The primary sponsor of the bill here in Delaware, Senate Bill 32, was State Senator Darius Brown, and he joins us on this episode to walk through the genesis of that legislation, the work to pass it, and where it stands today. So I want to start as we talk about the CROWN Act, Senate Bill 32, that was passed and signed back in 2021. I wanted to start by just asking you, what prompted you to bring this bill to the General Assembly?
Well, thank you so much for that question about the CROWN Act. It is legislation that we passed here in the Delaware General Assembly to prohibit discrimination on hair texture and protective hairstyles such as braids, locks, twists, and knots. Within our society, we recognize within minority communities, African American communities, but also communities of every ethnic background, there are certain desires that individuals may have in how they express themselves with their hair color, the length of their hair, and so with that, there may be some prejudices given to those individuals when they're in the workplace. And so we wanted to provide this anti-discrimination legislation around removing those barriers to individuals for employment in different workspaces and places, educational spaces that they may be in.
And while this legislation is relatively recent and the push to pass similar legislation around the country is relatively recent, the issue itself is not. It is one that has a long history, correct?
It is one that has a very long history, one that is not always mentioned. But, whether you are male or female, you enter to certain professional settings as a male and you are told to be have your face shaven, to have a clean shaven face, not to have a mustache or a beard or any of those type of things based on the professional setting of your employment. And so some people literally made decisions around someone's employment, someone getting certain positions on a job, not because of their intellect or their skill set, but based on if they had a mustache or, if their beard was too long. And so in the same context with women around the texture of their hair, the length of their hair, the social construct of acceptance to more European looks of hairstyle, which for more ethnic populations, particularly African Americans, would be an unhealthy treatment of their hair to straighten their hair and to make their hair, look more European in hairstyle. And so these are things that have been talked about for generations around employment and outward mobility that individuals have faced within the professional setting. And we recognize that with this legislation, we're removing that barrier for individuals that they really should be looked at upon their conduct, their character, their intellect, their skill set, and not because of the length of their hair.
You've mentioned kind of in broad strokes what this bill covers. Can you talk a little bit more about specifically what it protects? You mentioned it's both the workplace. Obviously, I think you also mentioned education, so I'm assuming schools are involved. Just give us kind of a general sense of what's the scope of what this does in fact require from businesses and schools and others.
Yeah, it generally speaking, it is broad, but we see it most occurring within school settings and within employment. There's been many times in recent history that we've seen student athletes in other states, not so much in Delaware, but in other states, where they were not allowed to participate because of the the length of their hair or the braiding of their hair, where literally referees or sporting officials mandated they literally cut their hair that day, you know, before they get on a wrestling mat to perform that athletic feat. And so we recognize the need to have that legislation here in the state of Delaware as a protection against discrimination for our student athletes, and also some of the subtle discriminations that are not always, you know, verbalized that individuals, particularly women, would face of all ethnic backgrounds because of their hair. You know, there is also certain perceptions about women because they have short hair instead of longer hair, and there's discrimination in regard to that. And that's, again, every ethnic background. And so because of how society has changed, evolved, and some of those things that we may have adopted as standards, you know, in our father or grandfather's generations. And notice I did it intentionally, but you notice I said father or grandfather's generation, recognizing that we all have mothers and grandmothers. So being more inclusive in our society and how we address these issues in our policy making.
So you brought this bill to the General Assembly. What kind of work did you have to do behind the scenes to explain the bill and kind of garner support for it? Were there initial questions your colleagues had about this bill as you started to move it forward?
Well, the Crown Act is a national initiative, and so there are some states that had passed it before Delaware, like California, New Jersey, and others. And we were a part of a coalition that was called the Crown Act Coalition. It's actually a national initiative supported by Unilever, which is the parent company of Dove. So for all those that support Dove products, thank you for your support. It helped us in the work that we did here in passing the Crown Act. And so we were able to bring together coalitions of organizations throughout the state. We were able to bring together African-American Greek letter organizations. We were able to bring together owners of salons that are up and down the state, hairdressers up and down the state. We're able to work with in-state government, with the Office of Women's Advancement, with the State Human Relations Commission, and other state agencies like the State Department of Labor, the state, which is now the extension of that, which is now the Delaware Department of Human Resources. But at that time, HR was in the OMB office. It had not been separated out yet. And so we were able to work with all of those state agencies, entities, and partners around public education. We held webinars in regard to it. We had national leaders on the issue that are leading this issue in Congress, in the U.S. Congress, to pass similar legislation at the federal level. Speak to our different partner groups, and we had them advocate within the state legislature to their state senators and representatives where they resided. And so I'm very, very happy and pleased that the Delaware State Senate passed this legislation unanimously. It was bipartisan. Democrats and Republicans understood the issue, supported the legislation. And we had a great ceremonial bill signing where organizations from up and down the state were able to come and celebrate the passage of the bill. And it was fantastic. It was one of those things that we did during COVID. Mm-hmm. So we weren't able to get the whole bill signing thing done because of COVID restrictions. So when we were finally able to get together, you didn't quite know how many people would show up or what it would look like, but to see, you know, over 100 women there celebrating the signage of the Crown Act, it was a very, very rewarding and fulfilling day for us all.
You mentioned the fact that it passed unanimously in the Senate. It also passed unanimously in the House. I mean, how gratifying was that? Because it sounds like, I mean, I know there was some questions in some of the committee meetings about like fire departments and military schools and how this would affect them kind of enforcing the kind of their, you know, their codes and standards and dress codes and things like that. Tell us a little bit about kind of just, you know, maybe overcoming some of those initial questions and winding up with that unanimous vote across the board.
Right. And I think a lot of that came from what we know just through generations of what requirements were. And for all of us, we had to learn that the military does not have the same requirements that it used to have around being clean shaven and grooming. People have different opinions of that, but it is not what it had previously been, whether it's in the reality of some family member that we know that served in the National Guard or in the Navy or as a Marine, or if it's even what we've seen on TV that we just adopted as, a standard. And so through the public education of legislators understanding that the requirements of our armed services are not what we may perceived, assumed, or thought. And then also within our law enforcement and public safety agencies, that those requirements within our fire departments or our police departments and other law enforcement agencies are not what we assumed or perceived or thought. It really helped through that public education process of smoothing the concerns that others may have had. Again, time, society, culture has evolved in such ways that, we have to catch up to it. And so this legislation allows us to do that.
You mentioned that this is a national movement, and to date, I believe 22 other states have passed bills like this one, along with a bevy of municipalities. I do want to talk about one of them, Texas, which recently passed it within the last year. And it actually had a case in the courts involving enforcement of this bill or their version of the bill. Just last month, a Texas judge saying a school district there could punish a black student who wears his hair in long locks without violating their Crown Act, essentially ruling that the law as it was written there did not prevent the school from enforcing its dress code. And I guess the question I wanted to ask you is, does that raise some concerns for you, that decision, about enforcement should an issue arise here in Delaware? That, again, as much as we've talked about educating people and people understanding, that it's still, even at this point, there's likely to be some skirmishes along the way to making sure that this is enforced.
Yeah, the public education piece is important, but also if individuals feel as though they believe that they're being discriminated against because of this, that they make myself, the State Department of Labor, aware of it, so that there could be an investigation about it, and then from that investigation, the Department of Labor, would determine if this indeed was discrimination. What I will say with all legislation, there may be ways that people try to circumvent a cause or a purpose. For instance, if there are policies within a school that may speak to someone's hair and they don't want to end up having to be, someone that violates the Crown Act, they may say that the student was insubordinate. Well, the child's hair has nothing to do with being insubordinate. But there may be other policies and procedures that are in some book that a school has around protocol and behavior that they may try to enforce upon that student's freedom of expression. And so make us aware of it so that we can address those issues. I am not naive to think that they don't exist, won't come up, but we can only resolve them and continue to make the progress that we're trying to make for people if they let us know about them.
And is that a real concern that someone might be afraid to challenge, whether formally within the school or a workplace, or even maybe coming to someone like you and saying, like, "Hey, I feel like I'm being discriminated. What do I do?" Is that a real fear in trying to get people to exercise their rights that they've been given?
I think it's always a concern. I think the reason for the legislation is because there's been generations of experience where it was understood, it was known, it was accepted, and so for so many years, people had to assimilate in ways that were demeaning to them, that were unhealthy to them, both physically, both socially, psychologically. And so by us making these attempts to remove these barriers, I recognize that there's going to be those hurdles and ways that people try to navigate around it. And so, yeah, we absolutely need them to come and say, hey, this is what's going on in my life. This is how I'm being affected. I believe that I'm being discriminated against. And we will, Department of Labor will look into it, fair, evenly, and balanced, and have their outcome and ruling on it. But we absolutely need those individuals to come forward. The only reason why we were able to even pass legislation around the Crown Act is because there's individuals that were brave enough to say, this is what has occurred to me. And, after 20 years of working in corporate America and having to do this for 20 years, this really isn't right. And is there something we could do about it?
And just building on that, I know the one thing that struck me when I was reading about that Texas case was the reaction of the student who was involved after that ruling. And I'm just kind of paraphrasing from the reporting by the Texas Tribune. He exited the courtroom in tears, walking alongside his mother and several lawmakers who had co-authored the Texas law. And one of the lawmakers told the Texas Tribune she could sense the anger and confusion. And the young man actually turned to her and said, "All this because of my hair?" And my thought was, when we have discussions like this on a podcast, we often talk about kind of like bigger principles, right? And equal rights and in this kind of abstract way. But ultimately, on an issue like this, it is very personal, and it feels like sometimes we miss the personal stories and impact. Is that one of the hopes you have for something like the Crown Act, that it puts more focus on the personal aspect of these larger discussions about prejudice and civil rights?
Absolutely. Many people have preconceived perceptions, and people will call individuals racist. Some of that may be, genuine hatred, but a lot of it is just the lack of exposure to other individuals, cultures, ethnic backgrounds. And so we adopt these approaches to life based on what we deem our standard of behavior and interaction and conduct and so on and so forth are. And so when we get beyond that layer of what we have preconceived about an individual, it's kind of like when you'll see a video of a older white woman getting in the elevator and a younger black guy, and she clutches her purse closer to her. It's just a preconceived notion that we have that society has taught us about an African American man or a white woman or a Hispanic woman, that we have. And the best way for us to remove all those barriers and all those prejudices and all those preconceived notions that we have about individuals is to look at ourselves through our humanity. And for this young gentleman in Texas, but I can say even with our legislation here in Delaware, when one of the committee members, one of the senators, had expressed, even though the legislation was not specifically geared toward that population, it's cross and broad enough to support everyone around discrimination protections. But there, a white state senator had brought up and said this legislation would support my son, who has long hair, and I don't necessarily like that my son has long hair, but his generation, they have long hair. And Tom, most things in history, if you live long enough, you see them repeated. I mean, there was a time in the 60s and 70s where the thing was for people to have long hair and things of that sort. But no, the Crown Act, beyond just what some people may think is specifically for African Americans or some, civil rights issue and things of that sort, which it addresses, which is its origin, which is how it began, it provides this protection broadly for everyone and anyone, And so the same way an individual may have a preconceived notion and assumption about a young white guy, young white man that comes to the office and applies for a job because he has long hair, is the same. He deserved that same protection as the young African American male that may apply for the job that has dreads or locks.
And I guess, speaking of it as a national effort, and you mentioned, I think, earlier that there's also an effort to pass federal legislation that would do the same thing. And I'm curious if you feel like, seeing a case like the one in Texas or other places that have had some conflict over this, does that kind of speak to the need for the federal version of the Crown Act so that, perhaps, it isn't just going by state or municipality by municipality, that there is a blanket protection, a universal protection for these type of things across the United States.
Yes. So, I am very hopeful that if not within this Congress, the next Congress, that the Crown Act would be considered and passed. I think that the more states that can do it locally, it lends its support, lifts the voice, raises the issue. It is a bipartisan issue. It is legislation that is passing. And what as politically people may deem as a blue state or a red state, and so because of that, I think that it's growing. The progress is being made that ultimately we may see it adopted federally within our U.S. Congress, but we still want more states locally. We still want more state legislatures, state capitals to take on this issue, to bring awareness to it, and then again, for the actual residents of our states, the individuals that are being impacted, to please make us aware of these instances of discrimination, so that we can make sure that you have the protections that you need, that you deserve, and all of our state constitutions within the union, commit to of seeing individuals' humanity.
Senator Brown, I know we've covered a lot of ground so far. I just want to wrap up by asking, is there anything else you hope the Crown Act accomplishes over time toward advancing the cause of equity and diminishing prejudice?
I would say that I am so happy to see the progress that has been made in Delaware. Again, for us to pass the Crown Act, to see the bipartisan, multicultural, multi-ethnic support of the legislation, the conversations that I know I was able to have with my colleagues of all different backgrounds. Delaware may be a small state, but we are very, very diverse. In our population, whether it's the cities of Wilmington, the suburban areas of Newcastle County, the more rural areas in Kent and Sussex, to see the demography that is continuing to change in our state, the population shifts and growth of our state, the conversations are changing. How we develop, cultivate, and create public policy in our state are changing. And so I just appreciate the openness of my colleagues in the legislature, in something like the Crown Act and the many other things that we've been able to do in the General Assembly in recent years, about adding discrimination protections.
You've been listening to the Delaware Humanities Podcast, A More Just Delaware, with State Senator Darius Brown, discussing the Crown Act banning discrimination based on natural hairstyles. You can check out this episode of A More Just Delaware and others at DelawarePublic.org and DEHumanities.org. The podcast is brought to you by Delaware Humanities, a state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Delaware Humanities is the recipient of United We Stand, Connecting Through Culture funding from the National Endowment for Humanities to support A More Just Delaware and related programming. And that's a wrap on this week's edition of The Green. The stories, interviews, and podcasts you've heard are online right now at DelawarePublic.org. Just head to The Green's page on our website. You can also sign up for our weekly newsletter there by clicking Newsletters at the top of the page. And remember, The Green is also available via podcast at our website, as well as Apple Podcasts and the NPR and Delaware Public Media apps. We'd also like to hear from you. Give us your feedback and story ideas on our Facebook page or by emailing us at thegreen@delawarepublic.org. Thanks to all those who helped make this week's show possible. Rachel Sheffield at Delaware Humanities, and our senior producer, Kyle McKinnon. For them and the rest of the staff here at Delaware Public Media, I'm Tom Byrne saying thanks for joining us this week. And we'll see you again next week on The Green, where Delawareans get tuned into a first state of mind.